Hey, you're listening to the Words on Flick Show with me, Janine Coveney. You're listening to the Words on Flick Show on eWater Radio, KEWR-DB.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of eWater Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of eWater Radio, KEWR-DB, or its affiliates.
Hello, hello. Happy New Year. It's 2022 and time for the Words on Flick Show podcast, the first of the year. Welcome, welcome. Hope that you had a good holiday season and a good Happy New Year. Yeah, we're rolling into another year with the pandemic, but we're still here. I know that we suffered a lot of losses in 2021. We went through a lot of turmoil, a lot of trauma, a lot of drama, but there was always a lot of entertainment to sort of salve the soul, right? And though I know we're pretty much 2-3 weeks into January, I needed a moment to kind of parse through and digest some of those last-minute releases of the last year. So today, I'm going to count down my personal best and worst of 2021. So these are the films that I saw and experienced, and of course, I couldn't experience them all, and I know you have your favorites as well. So join me as I kind of parse through what I enjoyed and why over the last year. So stay tuned. Thanks. From over the year, again, reminder, these are the films that I was able to see and is not inclusive of everything that was released. Okay. So, and these are in no particular order. I think I'm just kind of going through the year in the order that I saw them, perhaps. Okay, here we go. Number one, I Care a Lot, directed by Jay Blakeson, starring Rosamund Pike and Peter Dinklage and Diane Wiest. Oh my gosh. Okay, this, I believe it was a Netflix movie. I should have checked, but it was online, streamed online, sort of at the beginning of 2021. Rosamund Pike, who was the star of Gone Girl, and she was kind of scary in that. I mean, this girl is scary, okay? So I watched the film first on my own, and then I had to share it with my mother. We both have AARP cards, and this film scared the crap out of me, and I will tell you why. Because Rosamund Pike plays this money-hungry, cold-blooded, vicious woman named Marla, who runs this business as a professional legal guardian targeting elderly people. She has them declared incompetent, has help from a doctor, slaps them into these care facilities where they're virtually imprisoned, and then takes over all their assets to enrich herself. And so she's assisted in this nefarious business by her partner and lover, Fran, as well as, I said, the doctor who kind of rubber stamps these dementia diagnoses, and also a callous senior care home operator. So they've got this hustle where they're slapping older people into care homes and imprisoning them. And so the trouble comes when Marla and Fran target Diane Wiest, who's this wealthy retiree. Turns out they picked the wrong lady to mess with, because she has a history with important quote-unquote friends who will stop at nothing to get her back. And her son is Peter Dinklage, whom I love. He's a wonderful actor. He's one of the few, if not the only, actor impacted by dwarfism who has a major acting resume, and he's wonderful. So anyway, so Peter Dinklage and the character Marla go head to head, and the film's, you know, starts out as, you know, her working this scam, and it increasingly gets more and more bizarre, violent, dangerous, And Rosamund Pike is freaking scary in this film because no matter what Peter Dinklage has for her, she's got something back for him. And she's just awesome. So I highly recommend it. It's unlike anything you've ever seen before. And yeah, best of 2021. Okay. So the next thing I'll add to my list, number two, is the film Passing, directed by Rebecca Hall, starring Tessa Thompson and Ruth Negga, with Andre Holland, Bill Camp, Gbenga Akinagbe, Antoinette Crowe-Legacy, Alexander Skarsgård. And I've talked about this film in a previous Words on Flicks broadcast, where I just think the acting is spectacular. The choice to have it in black and white. The pace might be a little bit slow for people. It's about the choice two African-American women in the early 1920s make about one. They were childhood friends. One chooses to pass for white and marries a white man who does not know her ethnicity. And she reconnects with her childhood friend who is light enough and could pass. She passes when she chooses to, when it's convenient. But she's a staple of her, a pillar of her Harlem African-American community. And just the tensions and the push and pull between these two women and their flirting with danger, it just makes for a fascinating character study, and highly recommended. I've talked about it before. You've read all the reviews. If you think it's slow, that's because there's a lot going on under the surface. So this is not a movie you want to watch with distractions. You really want to give it your full attention. It's fabulous. Okay. Number three on the list is going to be Don't Look Up, directed by Adam McKay, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Rob Morgan, Jonah Hill, Mark Rylance, Tyler Perry's in it, Ron Perlman, Timothy Chalamet. Even Ariana Grande gets into it. And of course, Cate Blanchett and Meryl Streep. And this is a, I don't even know what to call it, a dark comedy, a scathing comment on our current media-obsessed culture, our political climate, fake news, false internet rumors, our callousness as a country. It's about the discovery of a comet that is heading straight for Earth and about to demolish everything, demolish the entire planet. And these two scientists discover it, and they let the president, who's played by Meryl Streep, as kind of like a, she's like a housewife of Beverly Hills kind of type, who's always worried about her numbers and her media presence and, you know, the next election. So how does the government deal with this impending doom, not just for the country, but for the entire planet? And how it's handled, it is just, it you can't even believe it. It's unbelievable. But at the same time, as you watch this movie, you recognize so much that's going on in the current culture and how people could actually act this way with such disregard and so much indifference to science, first of all, and to their fellow human beings. It's just stunning. It's funny. It's really funny, but it's terrifying at the same time. So I highly recommend Don't Look Up. It's gotten some bad reviews for people's, you know, people are saying, oh, it just hits you over the head with its message and there's nothing subtle about it. Yeah, there's nothing subtle about it. And that's the point. Okay. So I highly recommend this movie. Let's see. What are we up to now? Number four, I think this is. All right. Summer of Soul, the found footage found footage documentary directed by Questlove, who discovered that there was old footage of a 1969 series of free concerts given in a Harlem playground, Harlem Park, and featuring all these top-notch performers: Stevie Wonder, Nina Simone, Sly and the Family Stone, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Mahalia Jackson, B.B. King, The Fifth Dimension. So what Questlove and his editors did was patch together all of this footage with information about the political climate, the social climate, civil rights at that time. And, of course, you have the reactions of the people who had been at the concerts when they were teenagers and are now reflecting back. It is just a wonderful, wonderful piece of nostalgic history, music history, civil rights history. I can't say enough about this movie. I did do a podcast about it. Summer of Soul. Fantastic. Okay. Number five, Respect, directed by Liesl Tommy, with Jennifer Hudson, Forest Whitaker, Marlon Wayans, Audrey McDonald, Mark Maron, Titus Burgess, Mary J. Blige. Okay. I thought this film about the life of Aretha Franklin was good enough to get on my top 10. I enjoyed watching it. I thought the performances were good. I thought that we got to see everything that Aretha was up against as she conducted her career, as she went through her career and went from decade to decade, dominating almost every style of music, from songbook standards to, you know, raw soul to Broadway to funk, even to hip hop toward the end of her career, though we didn't get that far in this movie. And I think for those who might not have thought about her career as a whole and her as a person, this was a good representation. However, this film kind of reminded me again of the real limits that biopics have in terms of showing us something about the person, about who they really were, you know, without input from that person themselves. It's really hard to portray the truth or get the essence of who that person was. And Aretha wasn't particularly forthcoming. She was sort of very to herself unless you were really, really close to her. And so, of course, a lot of people have a lot to say about how accurate the film was in portraying her as a person. So I think the tide is turning, at least in my own mind, about biopics. You know, I don't know why we need to do them other than they're like educational tools for those who don't know, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, all that being said, who cares? Respect is good, and it gets to number five on my list. Boom. Next up, The Harder They Fall, directed by James Samuel, also written by James Samuel, co-written, with Jonathan Majors, Idris Elba, Zazie Beetz, Regina King, Delroy Lindo, Lakeith Stanfield, Danielle Deadwyler, Dion Cole. I love Westerns, number one. Number two, this has an exciting cast, a revisionist Western where Black people are the protagonists, antagonists, they're the background, they're the foreground, they make the story, and they have tight relationships within themselves, between themselves, and it tells the story of how Blacks won the West and operated in the West. And it is based partially on historical figures, and I know here again we run into the issue of how accurate is it. Accurate representation historically, accurate representation visually in terms of how well the casting reflected the actual figures from history in terms of skin color and features and things like that. You know, fictional films are not documentaries, people. And I think this film is really a wonderful piece of work, even with its soundtrack, which is a contemporary soundtrack and not music that you would find in the 1800s. I just thought it was a fantastic piece of work. I did not get tired of it. I just drank in every wonderful visual. And in that sense, this movie is a standout. It's number 6 on my list. Okay, what do you think so far? Are you resonating with some of these? I don't know. I know people have a lot of opinions about what they like and they don't like, and I'm only up to number 6. Okay, number 7, Malcolm and Marie. I feel like this movie came out the year before. I don't know why. I think it came and went in the early spring. It was kind of a blip on everybody's screens. Everyone was talking about it, and then it went away. And I really want to stop and talk about how impactful, how dramatic, how gut-wrenching, heartbreaking, true in some places this film is about relationships. Directed by Sam Levinson, who also wrote the screenplay, it stars Zendaya, who is quickly dominating all the media with her fantastic screen performances like Euphoria and this, and now she's in the new Spider-Man series. She's modeling, she's representing products, she's just everywhere. She's fantastic. Okay, Zendaya. And John David Washington, as we know, the son of the fabulous Denzel. So Malcolm and Marie is sort of a Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf type film. If you're familiar with that film from the 1960s, this couple comes home from an awards show where John David Washington has been honored in the film and TV industry, and Zendaya is his long-term girlfriend. And in coming back and wanting to celebrate, and they're slightly drunk and they're tired, somehow all these old resentments come out, old history, old problems, unequal balance of power between them, the not so healthy psychological reasons they came together and stayed together. It is a tour de force between the two of them in terms of their acting and in terms of how much is revealed. Is it a feel-good movie? No, it is not. It's devastating in places. But these two people are the realists, are just getting down to the nitty-gritty of who they are and saying the most vicious things to each other, but yet it's the honesty, and they can go on together. That's the amazing thing. They will probably go on together. So it's a landmark film, I would say. A lot of people dismissed it. I don't think it's dismissible. So that's number 7 on my list. Number 8, The Lost Daughter. Now, this film is really, truly stunning. It's the first film directed by actress Maggie Gyllenhaal with the fabulous Oscar-winning Olivia Colman, Jesse Buckley, Dakota Johnson, and Ed Harris. And this movie has really struck a chord in people. It's muddied the waters in terms of talk about motherhood, toxic motherhood, indifferent motherhood, shameful motherhood, and things like that. The film is proving too slow for some people who don't really get the gist of it. It's been called a psychological drama. It's also been called a thriller. I wouldn't call it a thriller. However, there are elements to it that as you watch, it puts you on the edge of your seat. So Olivia Colman plays an academic. She's a translator of Italian literature. She's trying to build her career. And at this point in the movie, she's taken a vacation alone to a seaside village so that she can work on, I don't know what she's working on, a translation or a major paper or something like that. Something where she doesn't want to be bothered with any noise or distractions, and she just wants to focus on herself. And of course, large American family shows up with their multiple cousins and uncles and aunts and children, and they're loud and they're distracting. And the main character, Leda, recalls how she was as a young mother, and she sort of latches on to Dakota Johnson, who has a young child with her. And so Leda is remembering how draining it was on her to raise these two girls pretty much on her own, because she, while she did have a husband, he was a little bit indifferent and into his own academic career. And at some point when the girls were young, she actually packed up and left. Now, she didn't leave them alone, but she did leave her girls for a period of time. And some people look on that as absolutely unforgivable. So in that sense, this movie really does tackle a subject that's been taboo for a while. The main character of Leda, she's not necessarily a likable character, but I empathize with her because I'm a writer. I don't like distractions. I never actually had children, and I wrote this in a Facebook post where several women were debating the merits of this movie, and I shared that, Leda loved her daughters, but she was just losing her own sense of self, and you can't be a good mother when your own psyche is damaged, when you're mentally absent, when you're mentally addled. Her mental health was going down the tubes. And, even as a younger woman, me myself, in a confession, my younger sisters, who are both mothers, they always used to tease me saying perhaps it was good that I didn't have kids because they'd probably find them locked in a closet when they came to visit. And honestly, I'm not sure that they weren't right. I love kids. I adore kids. I love spending time with them. But I also love the idea that there's a finite amount of time and they can go home and I can have my solace and quiet to do what I want to do. So Leda, again, she's not a likable character. And you keep thinking that there's going to be a daughter lost forever in this film. And there isn't, but the title, The Lost Daughter, does make you think about what Leda has done in her life and whether it was worth it. Whether her need to soothe herself with a memory of her own childhood and also kind of get a dig back at all the disruptive daughters of the world by stealing a doll is really cruelty. Anyway, it's a movie that makes you think, it makes you talk, and so yes, it is on my list, number 8. Number 9, In the Heights, directed by John M. Chu. And of course, we have the influence of Lin-Manuel Miranda as the author, with Anthony Ramos, Corey Hawkins, Leslie Grace, Melissa Barrera, Olga Meredith, Daphne Rubin Vega, Gregory Diaz IV, Stephanie Beatriz, Dasha Polanco, Jimmy Smits. This movie, okay, I grew up in the Bronx, y'all. Part of my family is Puerto Rican in heritage. In the Bronx and Manhattan that I know growing up, there were bodegas on every corner and salsa music spilled from cars and windows and storefronts. And yes, the Peraguas man came through. And this film of the Broadway production, Broadway hit, it reminded me of all of that. And it reminded me of, you know, the relationships that we have and how we make family in our neighborhoods. And it reminded me of young love. And it reminded me of, you know, wanting to get out of the neighborhood and make your way. Not that you want to leave your neighborhood behind necessarily. You'll never leave your roots behind. But you want to be able to become all that you can be. You want to travel. You want to be able to talk to anyone in the world at all levels of society. That's just what this reminded me of. And I love the music. I loved the performances. I know that Lin-Manuel Miranda has taken a lot of guff in this movie again for colorism, because we know that, you know, Caribbean Latinos, Latinas, Latinx, we come in all colors and shades and hair textures. But I'm not gonna, you know, hit Lin-Manuel Miranda or the director, who's Asian, for putting this together and giving us, you know, a rare view of ourselves. And while the reboot of West Side Story attempts to do the same, and in some ways is very successful, I don't think it's as good a movie or as good a representation as In the Heights. So there you have it. That's number 9 on the list. So number 10, Judas and the Black Messiah, directed and written by Chaka King and Will Burson, with Daniel Kaluuya, Lakeith Stanfield, Jesse Plemons, Dominique Fishback, Ashton Sanders, Daryl Britt Gibson, Lil Rel Howery, and even Martin Sheen shows up here. As a film about perhaps for some a forgotten piece of history that should not be forgotten, this film entangles the story of William O'Neill, who was a low-level petty thief that the FBI forced him to infiltrate the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party and report back on the doings of Chairman Fred Hampton, and the push and pull between these two characters, how even though William O'Neill was a turncoat and a spy and an informer, how he respected Fred Hampton for what he was trying to do, but he just got caught up in it. And I think Lakeith Stanfield, his performance gets overshadowed by Daniel Kaluuya as Fred Hampton, and Daniel did a spectacular job. Both men were nominated for Oscars for their work. But I think it's Stanfield who really has the harder job, because he has to really portray the two-sidedness, the two-facedness, the duplicity, if you will, in his actions. And in real life, later on, William O'Neill was interviewed about his role in the assassination of Fred Hampton, and soon after, he committed suicide. I just think it's a wonderful movie, and more people should see it. Okay, so that's 10. Okay, so that was 10, but of course, I have more also-rans, if you will, and these are my choices. Encanto, which I just saw last night, another Lin-Manuel Disney collaboration. Of course, there were more creators in that, but Lin-Manuel Miranda did the music, and I loved it. It's set in Colombia. There is a lot going on in this in terms of an enchanted house, and each member of the family has a special gift, and it just combines a lot of storytelling with a lot of family values and fantasy, and I kind of lost the thread of what was going on at a certain point, but I still loved every moment of it. So that's one. Another one is The Tragedy of Macbeth, which I just saw yesterday. And if you're not ready for the Shakespearean language, It takes a minute to get into it and attune your ear to it. But I love Frances McDormand and everything that she does. The visuals, the stark black and white visuals are fantastic. And Denzel Washington, at first I was thinking, you know, is he really, you know, we know he's a good actor. There's nothing to quibble. But is he really going to be able to inhabit this character? Let me tell you, he is amazing because Macbeth is always seen as a bloodthirsty character. In Denzel Washington's Macbeth, you see that the good and evil in him are really struggling, really, really struggling, and he's basically losing his sanity. And you really see it in his profile. It's spectacular. Okay, so that's two. I want to give a shout out to Andra Day for her work in The United States versus Billie Holiday, which is Lee Daniels' fictionalized version of Billie Holiday's struggle to keep Strange Fruit from being completely wiped off the planet and never performed. Another one, I loved Coming to America, which was Eddie Murphy's all-star reboot of the original Coming to America, which is one of those movies where if it's on TV, I have to watch it. I don't care how many times I've seen it. It's filled with so many iconic actors and performances and comic lines, and this was just fun. So I'm not mad at it. Is it high cinema? No, but I'm not mad at it. It was wonderful. The French Dispatch also... And when I first saw it, I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of insidery. If you don't know the New Yorker and the types of stories that they did, you're not going to get it. But it's still an amazing fun house of visual images and storytelling and surprise performances. And there's a lot going on in there. And I really liked it. And did I say Get Back? Get Back. Director Peter Jackson, he pieced together all of this footage from 4 weeks in the lives of the Beatles as they're putting together the Get Back album. And it's just really fun to see John, Paul, George, and Ringo when they're young and they're already successful. They're in the, you know, they're in the middle of their careers, toward the end of their days as Beatles, as a group together. And it's just fun to see their creative process. And also when, Billy Preston comes in. They were having kind of some malaise and some, you know, diddling around, not knowing what they're doing. And as soon as he shows up with his big smile and his creative energy, they just kind of snap too. So that's fun to see as well, if you have the time, because it's, you know, 8 hours of watching. So those are my five also-rans for you. Now, I also have films that we're kind of, I won't say they weren't the worst. They're not the worst of 2021. They just kind of left me cold. And so the first one I have to say, and I'm sorry to say it, is Bruised. We all love Halle Berry. We're all behind her. We want her to do well. This is the first movie that she directed. I think she does a great job. But for me personally, I feel like it's a ruse when, you know, an actress this glamorous and accomplished really uglies herself up to get gritty and real. It's a ploy. And also, I can't help, in a screenwriting class long ago, you know, 20 years ago, I remember that the instructor said there were two kinds of bad scripts. And one of them was a script where the protagonist is very self-centered and dealing with a lot of drama and focus on self. And then they have to totally readjust their lives and, you know, reclaim their humanity when they have to take care of a child, a baby, a child, you know. And I think Halle's good in the film, even though she's a little too old to play a fighter at that level. She does a good job. She's fit enough. And the actor playing her son is amazing. He's so good. But I was just, it's okay. It's an okay movie. It's okay. Hillbilly Elegy, didn't need it. Dune, why do we have to have a remake of Dune? I'd rather watch the original, which is like a crazy acid trip. I never read the movies, and the first time I saw the original Dune, I was like, oh my god, what am I looking at? This is insane. But I enjoy it so much better than this remake, which I sat through and I thought, there's a second part. I got to sit through more of this plotting stuff. And Timothy Chalamet looks like, you know, he looks like a 12-year-old child to me. But that's probably just a function of me being a senior citizen at this point. I've already talked about West Side Story. I kind of like it, but I kind of don't, because I feel like this West Side Story is an attempt by the director to correct the original. It's almost like a thesis paper where now the thesis of West Side Story has all these new addendums and footnotes on it. And, you know, they threw in some Spanish and they, you know, had different shades of people in it, and they opened it up to other parts of the city, which I didn't think they needed to do. And they, you know, start explaining the sociology of it. It's too much. No me gusta. Okay. No me gusta. Okay. King Richard, sorry, y'all. I know you got the Will Smith fans out there. I know that you love Venus and Serena, and I'm not taking away from all of that. I'm just having trouble with biopics these days and the attempt to tell stories from a particular viewpoint and not include all of the facts, all the figures. And, you know, there's a real attempt in biopics to keep to an uplifting story, whether or not that really fits the facts of the story. And I'm not saying, you know, Richard was not an amazing dad in terms of his focus on getting Serena and Venus to championship tennis. All right. Didn't like it. No Time to Die. I was just kind of like, oh, I love 007. You know, I love James Bond. Why? Apparently there is time to die. And that just depressed me. I mean, I don't want to be depressed at a 007 movie. You know what I'm saying? I mean, these 007 movies have become psychological dramas now, as well as just actioners. But this one left me sad. Okay. I've already talked about The Many Saints of Newark, which was a disappointment. I didn't get to see Tony Soprano become Tony Soprano. Instead, it was about his uncle. Yet, thumbs down. And The Power of the Dog, I both liked it and didn't like it. It's one of those movies where you can't sit, you can't be distracted. You have to really focus on it because so much of it is subtle and is in the acting. And there's a lot of visual, there's a lot of like a lot of empty space, just orally, A-U-R, you know, in terms of the soundscape. You know, it is a stunning story, but it's just like, I just spent 2 hours watching this thing for, you know, it's like watching paint dry in a weird way, even though Benedict Cumberbatch is really good and the end is a great twist. So anyway, those are my not so much movies, and I don't even know if that was 10. So there you have it. And I missed a lot of movies. Like, I still want to see Zola. I still want to see Tick, Tick, Boom. I don't know if I should see Licorice Pizza. I love the Sing original animated Sing movie, so I have to see Sing 2. And I'm looking forward to Peter Dinklage in Cyrano, even though I hear the music is not that great. So there you have it. 10 and, I don't know, maybe 10. So to close, I just wanted to remember some of those that we've lost in the industry. Recently, we've had a spate of celebrity losses, and I would say that the ones that are most applicable to Words on Flicks are those who were screen performers. I know a lot of people are mourning the loss of Betty White on TV. She had a very long career. She was much beloved, and she lived to just shy of her 100th birthday, I believe. And then we had director Peter Bogdanovich, who directed some of my favorite movies, including Paper Moon and What's Up, Doc? And he was really a lover of old Hollywood, and he made some very distinctive movies. And I think, most of all, we are all bidding goodbye to trailblazing actor and civil rights activist Sidney Poitier. The loss of Sidney Poitier is really significant to the Black community, to history. He was not just an actor, he was a trailblazer. His dignified, noble, and controlled appearance in so many films fostered acceptance in the larger community. And he took a lot of criticism for portraying the noble Negro, but he helped diversify Hollywood in a real way beyond the images of slaves, domestics, porters, troublemakers, criminals, indigents. He played Black men of intelligence and compassion, and he really was a trailblazer, and he will be sorely, sorely missed. So I will leave you with that. Have a wonderful and solemn MLK Day, and I look forward to seeing you next month for the Words on Flicks show. And please go to the website or Twitter at me at Words on Flicks and tell me what your top 10 favorite films and worst films were for 2021. Thanks again. See you soon.